Seth has got wine. What are you drinking, Vaz?
Topo Chico.
Oh, nice. I got iced tea, half day, lemon tea. It's not great.
And that's why we haven't been hired as influencers yet.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Vaz Mahmood, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 558 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined this week by Vaz Mahmood and Mr. Seth Miller.
Good evening.
You're not honorable today, Seth. Sorry.
Wow.
Wow.
Tells me how I'm supposed to behave, I guess.
Like you do any other day, sir.
Exactly.
We got some follow-up on the United 1093 incident. That was the flight from Denver to LA that diverted to Salt Lake City because of a windscreen crack, I guess.
Shattered
into the cockpit. Yes. It was a weather balloon.
Yeah.
And what's the name of the company?
Sund something. The guy basically, like the CEO basically went on and was like, hey, yeah, as soon as we saw this, we double checked our data and we definitely had a balloon in the area. And then it stopped transmitting right when that happened. So, we're pretty sure it was us.
Wow. I mean, what's the deal with the weather balloons usually operate at a higher altitude, right?
Yeah.
So what was it doing so low?
I don't think they've issued a statement exactly as to why, but they did say that they were going to adjust their operations to get to higher altitudes faster.
Okay. So maybe it was ascending. It was getting, and it was just taking forever. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
I don't think I've ever heard of a plane hitting a weather balloon
I haven't either, but I mean, obviously there's rules about how they get launched and whatnot, but like, I would love to know what those rules are and how close these guys were to actually following them.
Yeah. Because Google launches those Loon balloons, don't they? Sure. Don't they still do that? But those operate at like 70,000 feet.
Yeah.
Or something. And then they like kind of deviate to catch the wind to move the direction of the balloon. I guess that's the same thing for weather balloons. They operate higher and use the different air currents to move around.
Oh, man. I mean, it's hard. It's not that regulated, right? That's part of the challenge.
Yeah.
And at least it hit the nose and not an engine.
Yes. Because that would have been pretty catastrophic.
Yeah, that would not have been pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just wild. I mean, did you ever find the audio, Seth?
No, I didn't look.
Okay, maybe we should dig. I'll try and look tonight. So anyway, that was our follow-up for that. We've got a bunch of new topics, though. American has a new credit card?
Yeah.
I mean, are we selling this thing? Like, is it good?
I probably should have done some more research about it.
I looked at it when it first launched a few weeks ago. It didn't look that interesting. But coincidentally, it happened right around the time when the Barclays card stopped accepting applications.
Well, that seems appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, it's a new card from Citi, the Advantage Globe MasterCard. And they also sent out a notice, like, announcing it and offering big sign-up, whatever, and then sent a follow-up saying, oops, you weren't actually targeted for this, but we'll let you use it anyways.
They said they accidentally sent that to everybody?
Yeah.
Wow, nice.
So $350 annual fee includes four 24-hour Admirals Club passes.
Okay.
Which it's interesting that they're explicitly calling them 24-hour passes as opposed to day passes or individual lounge passes. A $99 companion certificate for any single round-trip qualifying domestic flight in main cabin each year after renewal. $100 statement credit for in-flight purchases. First bag free. Group 5 priority boarding. So many groups. And a TSA pre-check or global entry credit every 4 years.
That's not bad.
It's a lounge card without the lounge.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Atmos, almost the new Atmos card.
I was going to say, it's like the Alaska card.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing it's missing is Wi-Fi passes, really.
But you get $100.
You get $100 credit, which arguably is better.
And you don't need to give Wi-Fi because American's going to be free to come from next year.
Well, so is Alaska. That's what everybody's talking about, is like Alaska's giving these Wi-Fi passes, but they're going free.
I wonder if Alaska's going to be slower, is expecting to... Alaska is going to be free only on Starlink planes, and it's going to take a little while to get that really rolled out.
Yeah.
longer than American is turning all of their SCF / Intelsat / QKU and Viasat planes just become free in January, I think. Sometime early next year.
Regardless of what the technology is, they're all going to be free.
Except the Panasonic ones.
Which ones are those? The
7-2s? Long-haul and 787s.
Okay. That kind of sucks that they're leaving the long-hauls not free.
It's specifically by vendor of what they can support and the contracts and such there. And like some of the 772s are getting Viasat swapped in pretty quickly.
Gotcha. I have to wonder, in the case of Alaska, given their financial troubles that appear to be looming, will they slow down the conversions?
Stop putting Starlink on planes?
Yeah, just take new deliveries with Starlink and stop retrofitting until they're in a better cash flow position.
And after their outage, I mean, we can talk about Alaska here in a little bit, but you know, I think that outage has woken some people.
Yeah.
But has it really?
Sorry, I just want to throw another interesting thing on about this credit card. The Flight Streak trademark bonus, which rewards card members with 5,000 loyalty points after every 4 qualifying American Airlines flights, up to 15,000 points each year for the status credit.
Wait, so what? Say it again.
You get 5,000 loyalty points bonus for 4 segments.
Okay.
So you get that up to 3 times.
So 12 segments gets you 15,000.
Loyalty points, which is like not quite halfway to silver, right? Or gold for them.
It's
40,000 points.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting that it's segments, because Alaska kind of went the other way and they did spend. So yeah, that's interesting. It's not bad.
Yeah. And there's some other weird / interesting partnerships mixed in. 6x earnings on Advantage Hotels, 3x on American Airlines, 2x on restaurants. Rides and rails purchases, including taxis, ride shares, and public transit, gets double points. And then a $30 per booking on Turo up to 8 credits, and a $100 splurge credit on up to two of the following: Advantage Hotels, First Dibs, Future Personal Training, and Live Nation.
None of those. I don't even know what half those things are.
I say I've only heard them. I've heard of Live Nation. I've heard of American Advantage Hotels. I don't know what First Dibs and Future Personal Training are. First Dibs, I gotta be honest, sounds like a sneakers, like drop release program to me.
Yeah.
That's my guess. I should probably look it up now and see if I was right. I'm sure I'm not.
It seems like it's not that bad of a card if your primary carrier is American and you do, you know, 4 trips a quarter. Yeah. Like, it seems like it's a solid card for that.
Antique and modern furniture, jewelry, and fashion.
Okay. That's not what I expected.
No. A leading online marketplace for extraordinary design. I have a hard time. What do you get? What's the value proposition here for the $350?
You get $100 from credit.
Yep. Okay. For in-flight. You get lounge passes. You get
$100 companion certificate, first bag. And like, I don't know. Like, I feel like the TSA, or the pre-check thing, like, fine, but that's only worth $30 because you amortize it. Like, I guess if you only get this and then cancel the card after a year, but like preferred boarding, the first bag free. I don't know. I feel like even with the $100 credit and the lounge passes, does American have the lounge crowding problem where they're not going to let you use them?
Well, that's true.
Well, I think AA is in a better situation than Delta or United from a lounge perspective.
Okay. Yeah, it's stuff. It's just, I don't know, it seems like a lot of money to spend for a card.
I mean, I wrote something up the other day. I didn't get a lot of feedback. I mean, I got some feedback about lounges just being, is the proposition even worth it anymore of just going to a lounge in most airports? Like,
you and Zach concerned about the credit card crowds?
I'm not concerned. I think it's just in general, like, even if you took out the credit card crowds,
yeah,
is the value there? Like, I was in PDX the other day going to meet up with Foz, and I couldn't even get a seat in the stupid lounge. So was it even worth it for me? I don't know. So for some people, I think they see it as like, yep, that's the benefit. I go to the lounge, I eat some free food, I get a free drink or two. And for me, I call it a wash. I don't know that the math's that simple.
Yeah. So,
I mean, for the pre-check thing, I think people should really be going for the global entry, but that's just my opinion.
Oh, they're both.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what I mean is like, I would say the global entry is more valuable because you're going to get pre-check with it. So why not just sign up for that and get the credit there?
I mean, the easy answer is there's a lot of people who don't leave the country.
True.
So global entry has no value, and it's much faster to get just pre-check versus global entry.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. Although I did hear someone at the airport the other day going, one of the agents was like, no, global entry does not get you pre-check. I'm like, yes, it does. Please be quiet.
Well, if you have your no travel number. But.
Yes, if you have it. I get where you're coming from, Seth. Like, what's the actual value prop of this card? And who's it targeting?
Yeah.
The value prop is the 90,000 bonus miles.
For the churners and then the bloggers.
Yeah. Does American still let you, or City still let you earn like crazy?
Once every 4 years, I think. You can only do one card, like one application. It's not like the old days where you could do multiple on the same day. I think you can do one every 30 days and two like every 60 days or something.
So, yeah. But it is it's a new card. So, you know, may as well. Although I wonder if they're waiving first year fee, $350 for 90,000 points. I mean, it's not a bad deal. But it's not a great deal.
No.
But if they're waiving first year, then may as well.
What's interesting to me is that with this, even this one is a MasterCard, and this means that all of their cards have pivoted to MasterCards at this point. Because they used to issue Visas and they converted those. So I'm curious as to how much MasterCard is funding some of this.
Is there anyone else that does MasterCard?
JetBlue.
Air Canada.
Air Canada and JetBlue. Okay. Because United is Visa. Delta's Amex, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Southwest. What's Southwest?
Visa.
Visa. Okay.
I believe.
Yeah. It could be
a credit card coming out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Americans also getting their first 321 XLR with the new cabin.
Yeah. It was delivered last Thursday, Friday, something like that.
And it looks nice.
Sure. It's got the flatbeds up front. First flight is scheduled for December 18th, I believe. American Airlines Flight 3 from Los Angeles, or from JFK to LA. It's the 11 a.m. departure. When they announced that, it still had a couple J seats for sale. I think those are sold out now. But
I mean, it's cool. I think this is one of those areas where the lie-flat seats are nice. It'll be interesting to see if these start making transatlantic trips anytime soon.
I mean, they absolutely will, right? They did a whole thing with the press release about the training they did with regular 321s to get crew familiarized with transatlantic operations and, you know, the different dispatch and radio requirements, et cetera, and then getting their check airmen certified so that they could certify all their other pilots. So they're absolutely going to fly transatlantic. I guess the question is, will they have enough to support that during the 2026 summer, or will it have to wait?
Yeah, because they need, if they're going to do it to like Edinburgh or, I don't know, trying to think of other places, Glasgow, etc., they would need a decent number of planes to support it with maybe a spare somewhere.
Yeah.
That's cool. What is this about an AI booking tool?
Oh, they put out a press release talking about how they're like the future of travel, and they're going to have this AI supported thing where you can like ask it a question. Like, and the sample question they gave was, I would like a 7-day trip somewhere where I can explore during the day and eat good food at night. And I mean, I don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's people who think that way and fine, but pretending that you have a good way to answer that question just seems absurd to me.
Isn't that what a travel agent is for?
Well, but we're not going to have travel agents, Foz. We're going to do it ourselves. Come on.
Oh, okay. We're going to have someone plan it, and then you're going to get to where you're going, and nothing's going to be open because AI forgot to tell you it's a holiday in that.
Sure, you're going to tell AI you want to go to Sydney, and you're going to end up in Newfoundland instead of Australia.
Sweet.
Portland. I want to go to Portland. I end up in Maine, not Oregon.
Or Manchester.
Yeah.
Either the United Kingdom or New Hampshire.
Well, it's funny. I actually was talking to someone from the UK, and they said, oh, there's one person that's from Manchester. I said, oh, New Hampshire? And they're like, no, from England. I was like, oh, that's my brain. Is I have a friend who lives in New Hampshire. So.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's anything groundbreaking.
Oh, no, terrible. I'm waiting to see it in action, but I just like to shit on AI tools because, well, I do.
I guess the thing that, you know, this goes, and this will loop into the other IT conversation. Like, why are the airlines wasting money on this stuff rather than fixing the core infrastructure and the basic services?
You don't get a headline out of the core infrastructure, Foz.
Yeah, but you also stay out of the headlines.
I think they don't care at this point. I think they're just like, our website doesn't work for a little while. Who cares?
That's the sad state of affairs.
I don't disagree with you. That's the impression I get. I mean, we can talk about Alaska now. So Alaska had an IT outage 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I don't remember what day it was. Happened in the middle of the night. I guess East Coast time.
It was a little longer than that. I think it was Wednesday night because they postponed their Thursday earnings call.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Wednesday night. And then it basically cascaded as to the West Coast as ops just, they just halted. Ops went to nothing. 8 hour, 9 hour delays for some people. There were people standing in line at service centers trying to get help for hours. Call, I think some of the call wait times to actually call Alaska were like 7.5 hours. So it was not good. We don't know the root cause. Someone said DNS. I don't know.
Always
damn
DNS.
It's always damn DNS, man. And this isn't the first time. I mean, Alaska's IT seems very shaky. Like, it seems very brittle. And whatever this was enough to just completely destroy it temporarily.
I mean, in the midst of that, JFK Seattle turned around over North Dakota and went back to JFK.
I mean, there was going to be nowhere for them to park in Seattle.
But you would think they'd at least get closer.
Where do you go? Spokane?
Spokane, Bellingham?
I mean, or I would say Portland, honestly, go to a base, but
there are no gates at Portland either.
There's no space to land if you have no gates anywhere. Like, you.
But to go all the way back to JFK, it just like seems silly when you're halfway there.
I assume they had crew hotel space available because whatever flight that was supposed to actually go to JFK didn't go. And enough people would just bail, like, screw it, the trip's not worth it, that you're not straining them in a third city that you've got to then reroute them through on a partner. It sucks. I get it. But like, they're not going to be able to finish that trip that day anyways. I'm not entirely mad about the situation.
Yeah, but you could go to Chicago and then start putting people on American, right, to recover some of it.
Maybe. That's the other problem is that
you find 150 recovery seats.
Yeah, that's the thing is like the flights are full,
assuming they're not all going to the same spot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. It was not a good look. And it seems like they're finally back to normal-ish. Some delays still with getting crews in the right place, but I think they're mostly back to normal. So. That's good. But to your point, Foz, I don't know that they care about the website. I mean, they've made the website worse. It's just like we've talked about United, made the website worse. They make some of the stuff just either less functional or harder to use, and it does feel intentional at times.
I think the problem is who they're designing for at this point.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all the airlines are designing for the Spirit crowd, the leisure traveler. And so it's fine if you just want to buy a ticket and a bag and that's it. But that's all they focus on at this point.
Yeah.
That's the fundamental
problem. What else do you buy?
Change tickets, right? Most airline websites can't even change a ticket most of the time.
Yeah, like if you go to Alaska's website and you try to change a ticket more than once, good luck. You have to call. It'll even tell you. You can't do that. Got to call. Because for whatever reason, it knocks it out of sync or does something goofy with it. I mean, the thing with like same-day changes on Alaska, it doesn't work. It hardly ever works. You could be on an F ticket with plenty of seats open for day before, next day, whatever, and it doesn't find the flights. It just doesn't work. So it's frustrating because this should be simple stuff, and it seems like it's not. So on top of that, Alaska is cutting a bunch of routes and adding a bunch. So I'm just going to go through these quickly. Anchorage to Detroit is cut. LA to Las Vegas, LA to San Jose, California, LA to Reno, cut. San Francisco to Orlando, San Francisco to Boston, San Francisco to Newark, San Francisco to Austin, Texas, San Francisco to Burbank, all cut. San Jose, California to Guadalajara, Puerto Vallarta, and Cabo, San Lucas, cut. And then they're adding San Diego to Tulsa, Seattle to Tulsa, Seattle to Arcata, California, Honolulu to Burbank, Santa Rosa to Ontario, Portland to Baltimore, Portland to Philly, Portland to St. Louis, Portland to Idaho Falls, San Diego to Oakland, San Diego to Dallas, San Diego to Santa Barbara, San Diego to Raleigh are all being added.
Not listening to Honolulu to Orange County.
Honolulu to Orange County, replacing the United flight that used to exist.
Was it United flight or Continental?
Continental, which I think it lasted until the United days, I think.
It might have, but they also did Maui.
Yeah, that's true. But that's nice for Orange County folks to have that option. The way I see this is like San Francisco is being gutted as far as routes, and
they claim it's because of planes. So the question is this temporary?
I mean, you cut the route, like that's dealing a blow to your marketing ability and your ability to keep those passengers that you might have been selling to, right?
Yes. I mean, look, it wouldn't be so bad if they had a better way of connection, right? But the problem is most of these cities don't connect well.
Yeah.
On Alaska. Like, I can speak to Newark. I'm surprised because those flights are generally pretty full.
San Francisco to Austin.
Are they also suffering for lack of a proper premium cabin, so they aren't getting the yields?
But they don't price it as, they don't price it the same, right? They price them more competitively and they sell it.
It's a longer flight. And so you got to make more, you need more revenue to make it profitable.
Yeah. I mean, they're charging at least, I would say 2X of what Coach is, if not more. And people are buying, like most of those seats are being sold, not some sort of upgrade or a buy up, but they're being bought outright as first at time of purchase.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to them actually having a real premium product at some point.
It will. You think they will?
Yeah, I think it'll happen.
San Francisco to Orlando is an interesting one. I mean, I think United does that twice a day currently. They've always been, Alaska has always been strong in the Orlando market. So I thought that would be one that would stick around, but I guess they just couldn't make it work.
You had another Virgin Atlantic route that died?
Yeah.
Virgin America route that died.
That's actually one of the rumors, is that the relationship between the Virgin America leadership that still exists within Alaska and the Alaska kind of classic leadership have butted heads about San Francisco for a while. And now the Alaska leadership is pushing to kill more of the routes. So I don't know. That's a rumor. I don't know.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is one of the amusing comments I heard, one of the many amusing comments Kirby made, Scott Kirby, United Scott Kirby at APEC with Texpo a couple of weeks ago, was when talking about routes, was if anyone tells you you've got a prestige route or something like that and you have to keep it even though it's not making money, the first thing you should do is the next day is cut that route.
It's not wrong.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think it's not to say that all routes have to always make money, especially from the get-go, but I think it was a bit of a set yourself a guideline, rule, policy, and then you better have a damn good reason to break it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about the ads. I mean, I think Portland to Baltimore, Philly, St. Louis, those are big. They're summer only from what I can find. Starting in May, Philly's nice. It's a welcome back type route. St. Louis is nice. That's also a welcome back route. Like they've done that before. Yeah. Baltimore's brand new. This is going to relieve some of the traffic out of Seattle for sure. Like there's going to be more people connecting in PDX, I think, for those routes, which is good.
Virgin did fly Baltimore from San Francisco briefly.
Really? Oh, I can't remember that. Yeah, yeah. So those are good. I think Idaho Falls is definitely a reliever for Seattle. And then they're adding Seattle to Tulsa on an E-175. That's a long flight on an E-175.
And San Diego to Tulsa, same.
And San Diego on an E-175. Those are long flights. But I mean, I guess there's demand. And San Diego to Oakland. Interesting. 4 daily on a 737. That's a lot of lift to Oakland.
I mean, I guess they're just taking the Southwest approach and hitting all three airports.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seattle Tulsa is just over 1,500 miles.
Wow.
But hey, you're going to have Starlink on board, so it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. San Diego to Raleigh. Is there a big market? Foz, you mentioned that that's a market that's growing.
I mean, it could be, right? I mean, the problem is, like, there's only so many places you can fly to San Diego.
Yeah.
And that's, like, you start looking for cities to fly to. Now, there's probably enough seats that, enough demand to, will it last forever? I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I think they're playing around with routes. So it's kind of a hodgepodge of.
Part of the thing to remember about San Diego is San Diego has a very big AA customer base.
Okay.
So some of those, Alaska can pull some of those flyers out to their metal over a connection.
Gotcha. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. And then United is adding a bunch of new routes from O'Hare.
Yeah.
What's the laugh for?
St. George, Utah, Monterey, California, Santa Barbara, California, Eugene. Idaho Falls, Falls getting big this next year. Lynchburg, Marquette, Rochester, Minnesota, Wausau, and Paducah. These aren't prestige markets, I would argue, but, you know, some important service, I'm sure.
I mean, Santa Barbara.
Yeah, but it's the one that seems to have, and Monterey would probably have some decent premium traffic too, but.
St. George would as well.
Think so?
St. George, Utah, that's money, baby.
So everything after Santa Barbara on the list is meh.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's interesting, like Rochester, Minnesota has been a place where they haven't, like Delta's had service for a long time. We actually know someone who lived in Rochester, Minnesota,
yeah.
And they always complained about not having United service. Now they have United service. same with Marquette. Like Marquette's got, it's like been a Delta mainstay for a long time. So
yeah, I look at this and I sort of see, I see this that it's a little bit of the dartboard trying to come up with more ways to grow at O'Hare in a manner that lets them pull more gates and try to crush American even harder.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think you're right.
And probably try to make some money of their own, but you know, the question is, will these 10-ish become exemptions to Kirby's prestige crowd rule?
I imagine most of these are on E-175s. I know Santa Barbara's a max, I think, and I assume Monterey's as well, but the rest are probably just regionals.
Can they do, I mean, I think they'd have to do Eugene with a mainline jet. I mean, I guess you could do, I did Seattle-Milwaukee on a E-175, so that's probably close. Yeah, basically the same. So, yeah, I don't know. I look at this list and I see taxi delays. That's what I see.
There's no delays. It's just baked into the time.
Yeah. Or have you seen how they're deplaning out at the pads every now and then? Have you seen this? They're bussing people to the terminal.
Eugene is a max 8. Santa Barbara's a max 8. Monterey is a max 8. Idaho Falls is a 175. Lynchburg is a CR2. Marquette is a CR550.
Wow.
What else we got here? Paducah's a 550. Rochester's a 550. And Wausau's a 550. St. George is a 175.
Wow. Getting some 550 love there. Lynchburg's the only one that gets the devil's chariot.
And that's, I'm guessing based on reading this, it's going to pass through to Dulles because Dulles Lynchburg also gets a 200.
Okay. Do it as
Dulles Lynchburg last operated in late 2001. It's a 9/11 victim.
Wow. Yeah, I was gonna, what I was saying though, Foz, was there's been reports that on O'Hare, the pads that are used out there for waiting on the west side of the airport, between the four runways, they're actually, if the delay goes too long and the gate doesn't open up, they're just bussing people from those parking spots to the terminal.
I mean, good, but bad, but good.
Yeah, it's kind of getting wild out there. O'Hare is not on my list of places to connect.
No. I avoid O'Hare as much as I can.
People laugh at me for saying I just book whatever's got the nonstop where I'm going.
Problem is like, when you have
to get you right now for saying I'm booking the nonstop where I'm going.
Problem is if you have to go to Chicago, you still have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Fair. I'll just avoid Chicago.
And then Air Canada had a Q400 parked at LaGuardia this past week, and they made an announcement about Billy Bishop.
This is an interesting one to me. And Foz, you'd mentioned that they were finally planning the pre-clearance to open. It's sooner than I thought it was going to be. But that's opening early next year. And so triple daily to Boston from July, double daily to Chicago, O'Hare, and once a day to Dulles from June, and 4X daily to LaGuardia from, I want to say, March. That's a lot of lift coming across the border there.
And I mean, Toronto, it's good. I think it's great.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is, and I had the numbers up here. I'm trying to get them again. They're doubling their service at Toronto, Billy Bishop.
Yeah.
Current July 2025, they had 367 departures in July. In July 2026, they'll have 759, more than doubling.
Wow.
And obviously, the pre-clearance makes that make more sense. Arguably, it's only necessary for LaGuardia, but I would say that because of how like Boston is set up and they operate out of B, and so they had to park at E and then tow the plane over, it would never work. All right, Dulles, I don't know how where they're set up there, and if they're like in Z and they can use the arrivals building, but
they are in Z.
O'Hare has the same problem as Boston, though. If you have to park at M all the way over there, get people off the plane, and then tow the plane over to whatever the United Gates area where they would go out of.
Or just leave the plane in the middle of the tarmac and just bus people back.
That's what Porter does at Boston. You deplane and board through Hardstand.
There you go.
So, maybe that'll change with the pre-clearance opening up, but maybe not. I do think it makes a big difference in terms of turn time, though, and so efficiency of the operations, and especially at Billy Bishop trying to sort of grow into that market. Also, though, right, that was an airport where there was theoretically demand for additional service when that Waltzing Matilda / Connect Airlines thing was going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Or even be the American Airlines partner there. And now that's dead. They've got Porter instead as their partner. So,
I mean, do you think, is Porter going to respond to this? Like, they're going to start taking advantage of pre-clearance as well, right?
I would think. I would assume so.
Do you think they start LaGuardia service?
With what slots?
Can they? I mean, that was the question, is like, can they get a slot?
Yeah, that's the other thing I haven't checked, is what Air Canada is going to do at LaGuardia. Are they going to cut other service?
Yeah.
Right now, they're showing, right now, they're just saying that they're going to add the Billy Bishop service, not cut other.
Isn't Billy Bishop slot controlled?
Yes.
So but where
it's not maxed out.
Oh, okay. I thought they were.
Yeah, Connect. That's how Connect was able to get some. I mean, last I looked, I'd have to go double check, but I don't think they're tapped out.
I mean, with this announcement, Air Canada's, they must be doubling their base in Billy Bishop, because right now they just fly to Ottawa and Montreal from there.
Right. And so I just said they're doubling the total number of flights.
Yeah.
But, and, well, the other thing that'll be interesting about that is how many airplanes they need to run that service. They have 6 currently dedicated to the Toronto ops, and they're fitting 9 total with the Starlink service to sort of make sure it works right and, you know, get that up and running. Doing this means more are going to have to get fitted. So,
or do they cut down some of the Montreal and Ottawa service?
No, so the total number of flights is doubling.
Okay. But are they keeping, like, is it subject to change as they get closer to pre-clearance opening, where they might start cutting back some of the stuff to the Montreal and Ottawa from Billy Bishop?
I suppose they could, but as of what they've published right now, they've added, not cut.
Okay.
I think it's cool. I think it's a nice, if you're going into downtown Toronto and commuting into from LaGuardia or from Boston, I think it's great.
Assuming the weather cooperates.
Yeah, fair enough. I wish they'd do more service. I wish they, you know, they had a longer runway and they could do more. It'd be great.
Every time I try to fly out of Billy Bishop, I fail.
is it the weather usually?
In the winter, it's miserable. In the summer, it's miserable. You have a reasonable chance in the spring and the fall, but that's about it.
It's like a skill issue.
Sorry.
I haven't tried flying out. I want to. I just have never been able to book a ticket that I could use. So, or I canceled it. There's that. Delta and Riyadh.
Yeah. We've sort of known this was coming. They announced last year, when they announced their strategic partnership with Riyadh Air, which, did we talk about their fake service to London?
The Riyadh Air? Yeah, we talked about it. We never decided. We never figured out which airport they were actually going
to. No, Heathrow. They got slotted to Heathrow, but they're, and they have to start operating because they got hit the 80-20 rule. And actually, it'll start this past weekend. Did it start last night? Yeah, I think it did, because that was the cutover, because that's the last Saturday. They're operating the flights, but they don't have their real airplane yet. They have the Oman airplane, I think, and they aren't really ready to sell tickets. So they're selling them, but only to airline and PIF employees.
A non-rev stream?
Basically.
Did they say what the reasoning was?
They're using this as a soft launch for the airline to make sure they understand how to actually operate as an airline, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so Delta, when it announced, just let that go. When Delta and Riyadh Air announced that they were, like, Delta is going to have them as a strategic partner through the Middle East for, you know, onward connections and whatever, they announced that Delta would eventually have service to Riyadh. Now Delta has clarified that would be from Atlanta. No surprise. And still don't have a start date, but I would assume sometime, you know, maybe some summer seasonal starting with the summer season in 2026, starting in March, maybe a little after that, they're going to use a 350. So,
and it sounds like Delta's getting some hefty subsidies to put that route in.
I mean, I haven't seen the reports, but PIF pays for everything, so why not?
Will they be boycotting themselves in that process then?
It would seem. No, we got over that. We're cool now.
Wait, is Delta really cool? Because the other two are, but is Delta really cool?
I mean, they're airlines. They've never been cool, but yeah.
And then lastly, I just wanted to mention that the United Hong Kong to Bangkok service started today.
Yeah, so then that's the seasonal slips, right?
Yep. And so that plane landed in Bangkok. Kind of cool to see a United 788 or 789 parked at Bangkok Airport. And I guess Ho Chi Minh City starts soon as well. I think it's tomorrow.
I have to say they're alternating days, right? Like 3 one for the other?
Yep. So That's pretty cool. For the bonus, we've got Blue Sky, which is United and JetBlue's partnership, goes live. Comac is out at Vietjet. Diversion Adventures, the Seattle North Terminal, and Port of Portland. We're going to talk a little bit about them. So stick around if you're a Patreon supporter. If not, thank you for listening. We appreciate it, and we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.